Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Hi, welcome to Fitz Dog Radio. I'm Florida Fitz this week. I'm down visiting mom. If you're from New York, this is a ritual. It's a part of the cycle of life. Your mother moves to Florida, and then you go visit her, and then you make fun of Florida, and then you say, I can't wait to leave. I love it. I love Florida. I like that it's warm. I like humidity. I like feeling young. I like feeling like I'm the most intelligent person in the state, which is not hard to feel. I like her building. She lives in this building. It's not an old folks home. It's just a building. It's about 7 floors, and it's like semicircular, and it faces the ocean. The ocean's right across the street. And everybody knows each other, and they're happy. And I'm sitting in the hot tub yesterday, and there's these 4 older women, you know, 65, 70, and they're laughing and they're telling stories. And I thought, yes, there is a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You shouldn't be sitting in a little house alone staring at the fucking Fox News and bitching. And you should be in a community. And she found a really good one, which I love. We almost didn't make it to this community because she picked me up at the airport in her car, which has dents. It's brand new, dents all over it. Life is a bumper car ride when you're 82 years old in Florida. They say that 95 just stops often. And if it does, you know that somebody plowed into it. It's all old people crashing. And they need to make them get tested again, but they don't. So she picks me up at the airport and drives me. First of all, she insists on driving. And usually she's picking me up and it's like, she won't drive at night, but she'll pick me up right before sunset. Be like 7 o'clock. And then it's a race. It's a race to beat the darkness back to her apartment, which is only about a half hour from the airport. And she's talking and she's, you know, turning and telling me, so she's slapping me on the knee during punchlines and pointing out buildings. Meanwhile, she's racing. She's going, it's like, you're 82. Don't drive 82. That doesn't mean the speed limit doesn't change every year you get old. And, you know, and I mean, drifting, a lot of lane changes. Some are intentional. Some are just kind of happening. And she's got the wheel. She puts the seat literally in the most forward position. So her chest is against the wheel. And same radio station on all the time. She doesn't know how to change the station, so it's just on one station, same volume all the time. And I flew in. What the hell airline was it? Oh, JetBlue, which I like. I like JetBlue, except I would say it's been a solid 15 years since I took a dump on a plane. And on this one, I had a couple cups of coffee and I was like, no, no. And so I excused myself from the two people. And here's the best. I'm in the window seat and a lot of times the people will just let you out and then sit down again. These people decided, we'll just stand and wait, stretch a little bit. So I go back to the bathroom. I go in and I'm lining the seat. I'm trying to put toilet paper on the rim of the seat, but it's got that vacuum and it's sucking the toilet paper off the seat in. And it's like there's a stain. There's already a shit stain in the bowl. Like it looks like there was a car race in this bowl already. And you got no room. I don't know how anybody over, I'm 5'8". I don't know how somebody who's 5'9" does this. And I get in a squat and, you know, there's pee all over the floor. So I'm pulling my pants down, but I don't want them drooping below my sneakers so they absorb the piss from some guy in row 16D. And so I sit down and it is hard. It is not a nice fluid. I had not been eating prunes, and I don't want to get gross. I don't want to get gross about this, but let's just say I go, it takes a long time, and then you go to wipe with the rolls of sandpaper that they have on JetBlue, and now my anus is being blown by a cool wind that comes out of the bottom of the toilet. So now it's drying out, and it was 9 to 11 wipes, I would say. Each one hurting more than the next as the cold air is blowing. It's dry. And I'm not saying I did a great job. I got through it. I survived. And then I get up, and it's like, they got the hand lotion. You might as well have some hemorrhoid lotion, too, because you have just given everybody who has sat on that seat a hemorrhoid. And I go back to my seat, and they're standing there, and my roommates are glaring at me like, dude, it's been 25 minutes. What the fuck? So anyway, so I sit down, and we get home, and now we're watching the Oscars. So we watch the Oscars, and it's just amazing how they thank people as if the only reason they became an actor was to win an Oscar. And the only reason they did this movie was so they could be standing here holding this trophy. Not because there's an art to it, not because you're trying to pay the bills, not because, you know, you're narcissistic. And they do it as if they... hold on, my mom is waiting at the door. Okay, she's back. My mom is back. She was just had her book group, which they must read short books because she's only been gone for an hour. What, do you spend 28 hours reading a book and then an hour talking about it? Popping. They talk about their period. They haven't had a period in 3 decades. So anyway, we watched the Oscars, and it is just amazing the narcissism and the fact that they even show up. Get a life. I've won 4 Emmys, never went to a ceremony. I won a Cable Ace Award, didn't show up. I won Best Comedian at Boston University, 1989, didn't show up. You're a loser to go to an awards show. Just stand, and the interview, whatever. I don't want to shit on the Oscars. People do that enough. But it was a lot of foreigners winning, tremendous amount of people from other countries. And it made me think, you know, I think Hollywood is going to rethink its deportation stance after this. You know, a Polish couple is standing there doing a speech off their phone. They're reading a text off their phone. And my mom has got the... you know, the Chiron, the subtitles running across. She's got it in like a 82 font, so it's covering a third of the screen. You can't see anybody's bodies. You just see the tops of their heads and their kneecaps, and the rest is just the words that they're saying. And they're just talking about the courage and the bravery it takes to get 5 million to read words that somebody else wrote while someone gets you cappuccinos. I mean, and you, all the different language, translate. Don't pick a winner who doesn't speak English well, because it's all about the speech and the show. I mean, McConaughey barely speaks English, but it's fun to watch him try. Give McConaughey another trophy. I don't care if he was in a movie. Give McConaughey a trophy every year. So my mom, and then we're watching the news and they're talking about Israel, and she said she was talking about Israel and Hamas, And I said, I think it's Hamas. Like, I don't know that it's not a pita dipping sauce. It's a paramilitary terrorist organization. Did somebody order some Hamas? And then they just come in and attack you with AK-47s. And I remember, my mom's here now, so I shouldn't talk about her. But Mom, do you remember the time you asked me to send you your airline tickets through the intercom? Like she was going to stand in the lobby of her building and these tickets were just going to come faxed out of the speaker. I know I'm still a brat. So, and then my cousin Denny, it turns out, Denny McCarthy, who I've talked about often, is my second cousin, who is a pro golfer, ranked 30th in the world and ranked number one putter on the tour. Anyway, so he's playing a tournament like 15 minutes from my mom's house this weekend. So his dad, who's my first cousin, Dennis, was down here with his wife, Elena, who's lovely. And then my cousin Robbie, just also my other first cousin, happened to be down here. And then my aunt lives down here. So anyway, me and Dennis and Robbie went to the tournament with Dennis's wife, Elena. And then we went out on the course on Sunday and we walked the whole tournament with Denny, 18 holes. And first of all, these guys, we go out to dinner the night before at this restaurant, and they're like, yeah, this is the thing about Irish Catholics. Everything is first thing in the morning. I don't know when they sleep. It's like, all right, well, Greg, I'll pick you up at 6:30. What? I was like, I just flew in 4 hours ago. I'm on LA time. That's 3:30 a.m. And the thing is, that's my cousin Robbie. He went to West Point. He's a military guy. Everything is like a mission. I'll pick you up at 06:30 hours, you know, and then he gets on the GPS like we're locating a bunker, an enemy bunker, going through the side streets of Florida, trying to find my cousin Denny McCarthy's house. And, you know, and then we get there, and then Dennis, of course, is up, and he's in the driveway directing us like he's a traffic cop in San Francisco at rush hour. It's like, okay, you got a circular driveway. I get it. It's not that complicated. And then we get into this truck that looks like one of those vans a bachelorette party would take out in Nashville and throw up in. And we're driving, and we're talking about my cousins. And I have one cousin, Brian Mulligan, who's a character. We're telling Brian Mulligan stories. He's sort of like he's a little bit of a black sheep of the family. And so he's down in Austin. I was talking about how I went on stage one night in Austin, and before I went on, the host goes like this to me. He goes, I go, how's the crowd? And he goes, they're good, but there's this guy, kind of a scary-looking dude on the side of the stage, just... he hasn't been a problem, but something's going on. So I walk on stage, and I'm talking for a few minutes. And I notice this guy, huge beard, you know, blue cap pulled down over his eyes. And I finally, and I decide to just break the ice because I want to get a feel for him. And I go, hey, where are you from, sir? And he goes, East Northport, asshole. I'm your cousin. And it's Brian Mulligan. So we hung out after the show for a couple hours, and now he always comes to me. Anyway, he's the best. He's living on a boat in Central America now, going from country to country. And so every time you tell a funny story, Dennis McCarthy always goes, you can't make this stuff up. Like he's some kind of a club stand-up comic from the 80s. One of those guys with the blazers that he pushes up to his elbows. You can't make this stuff up, folks. So we went to see Danny. He played good, not great. I would say call it an off week a little bit. I mean, he still made some money. I don't know how much. The guy makes money every week, you know, even when you play just decent. But he hasn't won a major tournament. Or he hasn't won a tournament. He's gone to sudden death. And I need him. Right now, I'm the most famous guy in the family, and I don't like the pressure. I have off years, and I feel like I can't be the guy this year. I need Denny to step up and win a tournament. Come on. He's the new generation. He is a marvelous golfer. He's so much fun to watch. He is, I put a bunch of money on him to win the Masters and the U.S. Open this year. I suggest you do the same. He's long overdue. And what a nice guy. I talked to him after the tournament. I've only met him a couple times, but just generous with his time and really nice to everybody. And what am I doing? So I'm here. My brother comes down in a couple days. Walked on the beach with my mom today. Having a lovely time. And if you want to have a lovely time, I suggest you go to Atlanta, Georgia at the Punchline, March 6th through 8th. That's this weekend. And then Hollywood for the St. Patrick's Day show at the Improv, March 15th. Hamilton, Ontario coming up. Toronto, Pittsburgh, Boston, April 4th and 5th. Escondido, Tampa, La Jolla, all tickets at fitzdog.com. And now my guest who's coming up is a guy who is in a band that is one of the top grossing bands in history, the New Kids on the Block. He is, I guess they're all kind of good looking, but this guy is particularly good looking. And super talented. I'll be done in like 3 minutes. And so he joined New Kids on the Block when he was 13 years old. This dude was 13, traveling the world, playing arenas and stadiums. In 91, this band out-earned Madonna and Michael Jackson as the highest touring group that year. I mean, look, New Kids on the Block, I didn't notice them. I wasn't the age to be into that kind of music. I was always like a classic rock guy. I always liked them. I thought they were good. But then you get older and you look back and you go, oh, no, these guys were kind of a cultural phenomenon. And their music is something that was a part of a time that people felt really in tune with the pop culture scene of the time. You know, it was MTV was coming out. Well, it'd been out for a bit, but... You know, I can't tell you, this guy is so amazing. I clicked with him. I know his brother from Boston, and we had a couple other mutual friends, but he walked in, and he was like a minute late and couldn't apologize more. No attitude. Pulls up in a freaking 15-year-old Mercedes, and we just hung out after the show for a while. We're friends now. We are going to play paddle tennis together. I feel like I made a friend. Irish Catholic guy from the East Coast. Such a good guest. I know you're going to enjoy the talk with him. Join me now for a conversation with Joey McIntyre. Joey McIntyre is my guest today. He's not slow. He's just, it's an accent from a region that he's from called Boston.
Slow. I thought, so you're a New York guy?
Yeah.
But you have such ties to Boston.
Yeah, I went to college in Boston.
Okay, yeah.
And then I started doing stand-up there back in 89. So I came up with, as you know, Johnny Tobin. John Tobin is one of my best friends.
Yes. And well, you're at least if not number one, but top three. My brother Tommy is a massive fan. And
oh, that's nice.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tommy's the best.
Yes, yes, yes. So, you feel very Boston. You've been adopted as like a semi-Bostonian.
You know, when people say you're from New York, are you a New York comic? I always say, even though I only did comedy in Boston maybe 4 years, I am. So proud to be a Boston comic.
Yes.
And you know those guys, the Don Gavins and the Steve Sweeneys.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, those guys that really
Did Bill Burr come up in the same kind of way?
I started with Bill Burr,
okay.
Louis C.K., Marc Maron, David Cross,
crazy.
Dane Cook, Bobby Kelly,
Who's the other guy, the writer guy my brother raves about? I'm not as schooled as him in the Boston comic gang.
He's a writer guy?
I think mostly write. No, I think he does.
It's Brian Kiley.
I think it might be.
Yeah, Kiley wrote for Conan from the first day of the show until the show ended. He was there for like 20 years.
Okay. Because I think my brother Tommy had dinner or drinks or something with you. Brian, does this make sense? Boston within the last couple of years, and
well,
maybe John.
Last time I saw your brother, we went out to dinner with, you know, Dave Attell.
That's it.
Oh yeah. Dave Attell. Yeah,
Dave
Attell. He's a New York guy.
Yes,
but he was in Boston to do a show.
Yes,
so we all got together and met.
Why I have this in my ear still is.
I'm
getting answers. I'm getting answers from Boston. He's gonna come hard early on. So just be ready. Oh my God.
John Tobin.
I got my brother in my ear. Yeah.
John Tobin's the guy that is friends with your brother. they didn't give you the Attell answer, though. Yeah, and John's favorite comic of all time was Dave Attell. So he was just thrilled that we went out to dinner. And then I've gone to Bruins games with your brother.
Yeah.
And he lived in Seattle.
He was commuting, yeah.
Commuting from Seattle, and he offered me his condo in Seattle.
You guys are roomies. I didn't know it was that close.
Well, it's not, but I wanted to be. And I got a girl for him.
Oh.
Is he still single right now?
Yeah. Officially, yes.
Okay.
He hasn't remarried. So.
Yeah. Well, I got a girl for him.
Oh.
Mary Fitzgerald. She's from Dorchester.
Oh, so it hasn't happened? Has it happened?
They haven't met yet. They talked on the phone.
Okay.
But when I'm going to be in town April 4th and 5th, playing at Laugh Boston. And I'm sure your brother
April
will come out.
4th and 5th.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then we're going to
see
some magic
happens. Dang.
Opening day for the Red Sox. I'm going to go in a day early.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Are you a Sox fanatic?
Yeah, of course. I mean, grow up in a Boston. I mean, Jamaica Plain is very close to family.
Yeah.
So you grow up, of course, the big four sports.
Right.
You take it for granted, so.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know how much of a fan I was until my kids were born. My oldest son was just... like this rabid fan out of the womb.
Really?
Because I didn't know. I guess I thought I wore it like a loose suit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, here he is 3 years old crying at the Bruins game. You know what I mean? Like, nuts.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in.
I had the opposite experience. I grew up, you know, Giants, Mets, Rangers fan. And all of a sudden my kid's sitting there. He's got on the Rams and he's got on the Lakers and I'm like, what? And I go, I gotta let him be his own.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I get that. It seems a more practical.
Well, you're gonna see more games.
Yeah, you're gonna see more games and share it with your friends and all that jazz.
Now, is this the son? I hear that your youngest son is a singer now.
My oldest son. Yeah. So I got two boys and a girl. Yeah.
Okay.
He's been. Yeah. It's just.
What kind of singer is he?
A really good one.
Yeah.
Son of a gun can kind of do it all, and he works hard and does all the, you know, he's been, you know, studying. He can play piano, guitar, sing, dance, and he's also a regular 17-year-old who, you know.
Oh, he's 17?
He's 17, yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, he's 17, yeah.
Is he, like, recording?
Yes, he is, yeah. He's there's no turning back.
You know
what I'm saying? Yeah.
You started when you were 13, so I guess.
Yeah, I
that
did.
Makes
I know.
Sense.
I know. It's. I know the similarities are there, but it feels very different. And as much as it's similar, I take no credit for any of it.
Right.
Except
that
maybe he sees his dad continuing to, you know, challenge himself. But he's incredibly inspiring to me, frankly. So, yeah.
I know a guy who's an actor whose son. And he's had a very full, great career, you know, been on series and all that. Mm. And then his son is now a big actor. And there's a little jealousy going on.
Wow.
Which I thought was odd, but...
Are you just picking up on it, or is he vocal about it?
He's
vocal
about it.
Are you sharing with
you?
Yeah. I'm a little jealous.
No, more like... so he's suddenly telling me about agents and what it's like to get agents.
Yeah.
Like I haven't been,
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a little weird, but I get it. I get it to some degree. But I think that somebody once said that there's nobody in the world that wants you to succeed more than them than your father in general.
Right.
Do you feel like it's tough My father was a radio guy in New York.
Oh, wow.
And he was, you know, famous guy in New York. He was like one of the biggest radio guys. Wow. And I always lived in his shadow, and I always felt the pressure to try to, I think all boys and men try to succeed as much as their father. Wow. Do you feel like it's going to be hard for your kids to kind of live in the shadow?
I know you're a special guy, Greg.
Yeah.
I know you're a special guy. Right. So I'm not surprised by this conversation. Right. But it's, you know, it's timely. No, it's very timely. It's very timely. And it's interesting to hear you say that, because you never know. I mean, I, you know, when you say your buddy has feelings like that, I would think, geez, I would feel so off the hook that my son would have any success at all. You know what I'm saying? Like, whew, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you did something right. That's your report card.
Or even in the same business, right?
Yeah.
I think you'd be more detached if he was, you know, a vet or a doctor or a bricklayer or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, okay, good. So, you know, I think he's good. And I think it really is about the work. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I mean, when you could sit down at the piano and play everything from freaking classical to Billie Eilish, I mean, you got to feel pretty good about it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's not necessarily how I came up. So that's how I look at him. You know what I mean? Like, but it's tough. You know, life is life.
Yeah.
Life keeps lifing and the business keeps doing its
thing.
Well,
what's great is, like, you know, I have my kids.
How's the close up on the sty? Can we check it on
that? Can we talk about the sty?
I mean, you guys said it was fine. And, you know,
look, I got these too. We got bits. I thought,
oh, you're doing
not a
comedy
guy
on my
you're
show?
You're not a bit guy. Yeah, I want to do Martin Short on Greg Fitzsimmons. You know what I'm saying? Now we can both be the same.
Oh, shit.
Now I look like my brother even more, right?
Damn.
Now you're talking
now
about
you
Tony.
Do, right?
I didn't.
You guys actually look a lot alike. Yeah,
we do. We sound alike.
Yeah.
Not a bad guy to be similar to.
No, he's right. And your brother basically is, he's a delegate for the Bricklayers Union now, which is what your father did as well.
That he could speak to that in a different way. Yeah, my dad was a biggie, as he used to say. I mean, he ended up being the vice president of the Bricklayers Union, but came up as a brickie. My brother did the same thing.
Yeah.
And now he's basically, you know, doing what my dad did, but, you know, he's in his own way. You know what I mean? I think he had to, you know.
He told me your dad busted his balls. Like, he had to work harder than anybody else on the site.
I don't know about that. Nah. You know. I remember he busted my dad's balls because he wanted my dad to get him a job on, like, the MTA. Like, a bricklayer on the MTA. There was, like, four of them.
Uh-huh.
And they just, let's just say they didn't do a lot of work, okay?
Yeah.
And I remember because I was there. We would have lunch and dinner at the time, right? And my brother would go in hard, right? And my dad would say, "How do you know? How do you know you're gonna like it?"
Uh-huh.
And he got him on, and 4 months later, my brother was freaking out of his mind. You know what I mean?
Really?
He was bored out of his mind and went back to just being a brickie.
Oh,
and then,
but
he works hard. He didn't know suddenly. They called him up and he got the call. He's like, "You got to go to Seattle." And he's like, "You got to be kidding me."
Yeah.
And he did a great job there. And
And
now he's in Oklahoma doing the same thing there.
He's in Oklahoma?
Yeah. Now he's going back and forth to Oklahoma. That's the new.
So I may not see
him. It's a new gig.
In April.
But he goes, he bops back and forth. So.
So why do they send him somewhere else?
He's the fixer now. Tommy
really?
Mack's the fixer. Yeah. He goes in and, you know, as you can imagine, the Bricklayers Union is not maybe what it is. I'm acting like I know something, this is a 1,000-mile view here. I think, you know, he has a lot of experience, and he works for the International Union, so
they gotta
go in.
Yep,
he gotta go in, and you know,
dude, the unions are, you know. This country's losing unions. My father was in the radio union. Mm-hmm. AFTRA was radio covered. You know. I'm in the Writers Guild, been Writers Guild for 20 years, getting my insurance. I got a pension. And, you know, big business is convincing Americans that it's in their interest to not join unions and to break them up. They've got, you know, Volkswagen down in Texas.
I don't understand it. I don't understand
it.
The only way you have power is in numbers.
Right.
That you got to stick up for each other. It's why they would just go, eh, it's fine. I'll trust Amazon.
Right. You know? Right. God, right. Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Starbucks got my back. It's all
good.
You know?
I mean, I've read the history of corporations. They seem to take care of people over time.
I mean, you know, geez, Louise.
And the fights that people have put up, the lives. I mean, people used to get their skulls bashed in, you know, marching for unions.
Yeah.
And that you can't get that back any other way than fighting that hard again when you lose it.
Yeah, it's...
Are you in a union? Is there any kind of like...
Yeah,
musicians?
No, I'm in SAG-AFTRA. You know, I've been lucky enough to do a lot of work and I got my card and, you know, movies and TV. And then I'm, you know...
Plus
don't get
equity
me
for actors for Broadway,
don't get me started
right?
about actors' equity.
Oh, really?
Ay, ay, ay. Well, there's a line from here to Iowa ready to take your spot, right?
Yeah.
So what actor is going to step up and go, hell no, this ain't right.
Right.
You know, you work your whole life to get in a Broadway show and they go, hey, maybe we should walk.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
My grand plan is to merge with IATSE.
I like that.
Hello.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because well, those guys, they go, see you later, Jeff. You know what I mean? While the chick's on her knees, me, chick, guy, on her knees going, ah! You know what I mean? Like dying after the show. They're see you tomorrow.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean? We need those guys on our team.
Yeah,
know?
I don't pick that up. That's Tommy.
No.
Yeah, that's not
that's
my
Tommy.
Job.
You
and know. Then and IATSE, if people don't know, is like it's all the below the line people. It's the camera operators, it's the
lighting,
set designers, it's the
everybody.
Costumers, makeup,
everybody.
And so really you've got the Screen Actors Guild, which used to be SAG-AFTRA used to mean American Federation of TV and Radio Actors. So radio personalities used to be in the union. That shit's gone. They don't cover them anymore. They all...
They're gone?
Well,
they
once they started, like, syndicating radio around the country, those big guys, the corporate guys, cut out the unions.
Wow.
And so now it's just TV and film. So you've got the Writers Guild, the Actors Guild, IATSE, and then some of them are Teamsters, and they all negotiate contracts in different years. So there's never this real collective strength of we're going to shut the whole business down.
Yeah.
And so that's why the last 4 years has been rough, because the Writers Guild had a strike. And then this past summer, IATSE was threatening to strike and they ended up not. But none of the development people would put anything into production because they thought there was another strike coming. So there's been 3 or 4 years of no work in Hollywood.
It's you know, as I always grow up hearing this phrase, the AFL-CIO, the allied craftsmen, you know what I mean? Or AFL-CIO is everybody together. Like, we don't have that in entertainment.
Right.
It seems.
Right.
Like they would, you would hear that constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the fact that that was a thing for the tradesmen, right?
Yeah.
It's not in the business. That being said, you know, as you probably know, you talk to producers in the business and, you know, it's all perspective. It's each side of things.
Right.
But like, oh, this negotiation or whatever they came to, you know what I mean, after the strike was like, wasn't a good one, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's throwing their hands up.
Right. You mean for the actor side?
Yeah, for the actor side.
Yeah.
You know, but like...
Well, because it's all about digital streaming, because there's no revenue on broadcast
Well, Netflix
anymore.
Killed the business, is what I hear, too, which I don't fully understand. You know?
Well, and now Netflix just announced they're spending $1 billion for production in Mexico.
Yeah.
There's nothing shooting in Hollywood
anymore.
I mean,
I just... It's not inflation. It's greed.
Yeah.
It's just, it's very simple.
Yeah.
It's just greed.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
We want more. That's it. Like there was a middle class because we were okay with a certain amount.
Right.
Like everybody was okay with a certain amount.
Right.
And that's why we were able to, you know, have a Chevrolet and, you know, one pair of sneakers and, you know, patches on your knees and it was okay.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't embarrassing.
Right.
And you had a good life and you went home and you had 3 meals.
Yeah.
And it was okay.
Yeah.
But now it's just bonkers. And I'm not saying, obviously, I'm a part of the whole damn thing too, but
no, but it's a
just
consumer...
more and more. Like, why are you going? And don't wrap it up like that. Well, that's good for Mexico. Like, right. Come on,
no,
man.
No.
Come on, come
no,
on.
No, and it really is a matter of like you're working, and then the profits are going to dividends to shareholders, people that don't even know the business you do. They don't show up and put on some work gloves and do something. Like, they're just getting checks every month. So the amount of money you're doing, the worth of what you do, is not coming to you. It's going to a third party.
And they're answering to the bottom line and their stock price.
Right, right. And they always have to cut. Every quarter's got to cut.
Oh, my gosh.
Every quarter they – first of all, profit means – like, for me, there's no profit, and I'm very happy with that. Yeah. At the end of every year, I pay my taxes. Yeah. I put a little bit into my pension account, and we kind of break even.
Yeah.
And I go, all right, that's a good year. But if you're a corporation, you have to do that plus 25%. So where's that 25% coming from? It's coming off the back of the workers.
I just, I don't watch the news much, but yeah, Starbucks is letting off another, I don't know, thousands of jobs.
So, oh, really?
Because they think, you know, and they spin it that it's more, you know, streamlined or whatever. It's like, wow.
Mm.
Wow.
Well, and more restaurants you go into, fast food restaurants, or you go up to the kiosk and punch in your shit.
That's true too. That's
and then
true
you
too.
Know it's and then
and I don't mind because I think of you know, but like you're tipping the fast food too,
right?
They want a tip.
Yep.
And I think, all right, listen, this person is trying to make a living. Of course, I'm going to tip them, but it's just ironic now. It's like they're doing less, but now we,
right?
It's like. 22%, 25%.
Yeah. No, last night I called up this Greek place that I like, and me and the wife were sitting on the couch doing a little streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Can you deliver us a couple of falafels? No, you got to come pick them up. Great. Now I got to get up, get dressed.
Yeah.
Naked on the couch as my wife. Picture what? That for a second.
I'm ding. All the way, huh?
And now I got to drive to the restaurant, pick it up. And then when I don't give her a big tip, she's looking at me. I go, no, the big tip goes to the guy that got in his car and brought it to my house.
Right.
That guy gets 20%, if not more.
Yeah.
But you just turned around. The cook made it. You just did a 180, and then you came back again. That's not 20%.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't want to – look, you and I have broken down business, the economy.
We got it all out
unions,
of the way, man.
The middle class.
Yep.
But let's go back to your childhood a little bit.
Mm.
I want to talk about a guy named – it was a teacher named Mr. Flynn who kicked Tommy out of class.
Wow.
And used to mock the band that he was starting.
Tommy.
Oh, or was
Joe.
It you? Oh,
Tommy's not in the band, so you bet. I mean, both went to CM.
John Tobin just told me this story driving over here. Was it you that got kicked out?
Flynn? No, Flynn was, Tommy. Catholic? Yeah, Tommy lasted 2 years at CM for whatever reason.
Okay.
God bless him. And then he went to Mission and Mission Hill, and that was more of a cakewalk, maybe.
Yeah.
Two Catholic high schools. But CM was all boys, and it was, you know. Yeah, I mean, it was.
Catholic Memorial is like one of the oldest schools in Boston, right?
I don't know. I mean, there's BC High, there's Don Bosco, there's Catholic Memorial. You know,
I'm thinking of Catholic Memorial. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, Catholic Memorial is, I mean, it's probably maybe the 60s or something
like
that.
Okay.
I ended up going there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the Boston game of telephone and how it relates to, you know, the classic thing in Boston is, yeah, you were. Yeah, it was you. Oh, yeah. You know, so imagine, like, even if you were nobody, say, we'll play that game, you know, but if there's any fame involved, like, they are going to assign you. They're going to tell you where you were.
Yeah.
You dated this one.
Uh-huh.
Then you fought that one.
Right.
You got kicked out of this place. You went over here. You know, it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, right, right.
So even John Tobin, a dear friend, No, by the time, so Tommy did his time at CM, and then a couple of years later, I only did ninth grade there.
Okay.
And I wasn't really famous. I was just like bubbling under. No one really knew. I might have been in the Globe a couple of times because the new kids were doing a little things there and there. It was the summer after my ninth grade.
That's what things
took off. That we got a break and went on the road. And then, so I didn't have to live in that I'm famous going to high school right. kind of thing.
So really. you just got tutored after that?
I did. I got my diploma from CM, uh-huh. but I had a tutor, God rest his soul, Marco Dowd, and it was tough. I mean, it was.
He came on the road with you.
He did. It was, 10th grade, I did sort of the work. I don't want the brothers from CM like taking back my diploma, but you know, it was a joke. I mean, we were playing stadiums by the time I was in my junior year.
And then you're probably doing radio interviews in the mornings. Signings and
roll the footage. You know, see, I mean, I was just like, I did instead of graduating, my graduation was I got my diploma in the basement of the Hard Rock Cafe in London, and they gave me like the thing, and they gave me the thing, and dude, it was at the height of I was white as a ghost, dark circles under my eyes. I mean, a tale of, what do they call it? A cautionary tale.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Right,
know?
Right.
But I survived, Greg, and here I am talking about unions and what we can do to make this.
Well, what's amazing is that, like, the work ethic that you really do see, like, Boston really is a town of, you know, grit it out, put your head down, do your job. And I think it seems like you take that work ethic very seriously. Like a lot of people after the success you've had would have kind of taken it easy.
Yeah.
And instead there's this amazing story where I think it was around 99 where you were trying to sell a solo album.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody was buying it. Here you are, this guy that's like, yeah. you know, at one point you were the highest selling artist yeah. in the world.
Yeah.
And now you can't sell a solo album. So yeah. Would you bankroll it yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely did that, which was back then it was still, you're talking about to make a decent album was like hundreds of thousands of dollars, yeah. you know? I got a lot of heat or whatever, like articles and papers and writers wanted to talk to me about that. There was a hook as far as selling a CD, making a CD and selling it off the internet
right.
was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, which was funny, I guess, from a guy who was such a pop guy and such a major label kind of, you
right,
know, that guy
right. yeah.
to be doing it. But I, you know, desperation is the mother of invention kind of thing. And I did do that. I pressed up 2,000 CDs,
uh-huh.
numbered them. And I always give my lawyer the credit, Jamie Roberts from New York guy, and he's like, "What you need to be on stage, uh-huh. you know? I forgot about that. You know right. what I mean? You just got to get out there."
Right.
So that was the impetus. I said I scheduled 3 shows: Boston, Rhode Island, and New York. And I said uh-huh. they got to know the music, so I pressed up the CDs, and then I went to Kiss 108 just to promote the shows, and. David Corey, the musical director, he said, "That song stayed the same. It's great. Let's yeah. play it." And uh-huh. it was top 5 request. In Boston.
Yeah.
But the big station, Kiss 108.
Sure.
Then it started picking up heat, Providence, and then New York was playing it. And then labels started calling me back, you know, because I made my own heat. And I ended up back at Columbia Records.
Yeah,
which the New Kids were, and
and the album sold a million.
Yeah,
gold.
Yeah, not a million, but it was gold.
No,
it was gold.
No, it was a million.
Let's call
dude,
it a million.
Dude, it was a million.
It was a million. It was a million. Yeah, no, it was top 10 Billboard charts,
yep.
and yeah, it was.
So
it
you
was
made your money back.
I did make my money on that, and good. Then publishing too, because they all came running for that. I said, "Let's sign the publishing deal before the album comes out,"
because
I'm always realistic, you know.
See.
Everybody gets excited, but the guy who's been there all along, you
yeah.
know what I'm saying, knows best. So I was like, "Okay, that's fine, but let's sign it before it came out," because
otherwise, the studio will, label will take a percentage.
No, just the numbers wise, because. It's almost like everyone thinks it's going to do better than it is.
Right.
You know, in my mind, I'm like, let's sign it before, if it blows up, great, but it might not do as well as everybody thinks
right.
it is, and then the offers will be, I just always knew that, you know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, I did well on that end, and yeah, I was scrappy. I mean, going back, I did have a dad that would always say, get a job,
yeah.
you know?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, the good thing about that is literally that could have been raking leaves down the street.
Yep.
It was about the dignity of a job. He knew better. It wasn't about go be famous,
uh-huh.
go continue to be famous. Why aren't you writing hit records, blah, blah, blah. It was get up and at him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he did, you know, instill that.
It's amazing that they hadn't given up at that point. You're the youngest of nine. And one of my best friends is the youngest of seven, and he was the kid that didn't have a curfew and didn't necessarily have clean clothes when he came to school. You know? Like, they were burnt.
They were tired.
But your parents hung in there through all nine.
Yeah. I mean, the Irish, you know, Irish Catholic, they just kept going. Uh-huh. I mean, my mother was a frickin' riot. You know, she'd tell you, the blood is falling out. You know what I mean? She didn't drive, so she'd walk everywhere and take buses and trains.
I'm having a 10th kid. It's my bladder.
Totally, exactly. And so, yeah, thank God, right?
Yeah.
Thank God. That's why I can't, bash the Catholicism too much. I wouldn't be there. You know what I mean?
No, it's amazing. And, I think growing up in the neighborhood you grew up in, did you know a guy named Kevin Chapman?
I know Chappie.
Chappie?
Yeah, but as older.
Yeah.
I grew up in JP. Everybody else was from Dorchester. Very different upbringings, you know?
In a way.
I mean, isn't it so funny how, is parochial the term? Is it like this very, literally it's one street over, but it's like them against us. It's like literally Boston, but every neighborhood, and I'm sure it's like that in New York and everywhere around the world, really.
Right.
It's like, oh, not them. We're like this. You know what I mean? Like JP is like, you know. Again,
is it like New York? Like I was born in the Bronx, and people identified by parish.
Yeah,
a lot of times
there was a little bit of that. Yeah. A little bit of that. It was just like, but dot rats were really dot rats.
Right.
I mean, we called them dot rats for a reason. Uh-huh. We believed it. You know what I mean? And then Jamaica Plain. Unfortunately, and they would say Jamaica Spain, which was a derogatory statement. Like it was a bad thing that we had so many Puerto Ricans. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then whatever. We were like, and within JP there was like Moss Hill that was fancier, and all kinds of different. It's funny, but that being said, like I heard Joe Rogan talking about JP was the scariest place he ever grew. He grew up there for a while or something like that. It's all relative, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
right.
Chappie. Where's Chappie from? Do you remember?
I think he's from Dorchester.
Okay, yeah.
But I knew him because he was a comic and he started this club in Quincy. You say Quincy or Quincy?
Quincy.
Yeah.
With a Z.
Yeah, he started a club in Quincy at a place called Footprints because he was a sober guy, is a sober guy. And it was this sober club. It was such a cool.
That's right.
Because Boston sober is not like my life's over.
No.
I got to stay home and white knuckle it. Boston sober is like, no.
It's like a union.
Yeah, right. It's a union. It's a fraternity.
Yeah.
They go out and they still party. They still have a blast. Yeah,
absolutely.
So there was this sober club in Quincy, and they used to do a comedy night there. And I got to know Chappie pretty well.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a good dude. I haven't seen him in a couple of years, but yeah.
I have a videotape of him. I had a party when I was first starting out, and I just had this funny idea of, like, I'm going to leave a video camera running in the bedroom. And everybody gets to go in and just say a message or do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Chappie came. I don't know if I should. I'll say it. So Chappie comes in, and he had somebody behind the camera. And he said, and it was a close-up of his face. And he goes, Greg, I've got a secret. And then the camera pans down.
Yeah.
And he's got no pants on. And he did the tuck. He did the dick tuck.
Nice.
I have that. That exists.
So is Chappie a trans man or a trans woman? What would that be?
He's a trans am. Yeah, he goes very fast.
1986,
he's very flashy,
yeah.
But in the end of the day, you're going to need a tow truck
for that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah. So let's talk about the new album. It's called Freedom.
It's called Freedom.
It's fantastic. I listened to it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. It's
Thank
very,
you.
It's just like sharp. It's very well produced. Jesus.
Thank you.
Is that the same crew of guys you've always had, or is this
no,
new?
No, I lucked out. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's 10 songs. It's 32 minutes. So it's like I kind of went there with like, doesn't keep you too long, but packs a punch, which I like. It's kind of like my pitch. But myself and Sean Thomas, he's this 24-year-old Canadian dude from Vancouver. You got to love them, right? They have that
you
special
love the
sauce.
Canadians. They don't love us anymore.
Well,
we
I know
them.
At the moment. Yeah. I know. But they have, very, very talented kid. I met him through the the pop icon, Miss Debbie Gibson.
Okay.
It was a dear friend.
Yeah.
And so anyways, here we are. And we have a great time. And as I'm writing, I'm like, I'm 52, he's 24. So as I'm writing, I'm like, he's getting something out of this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why do I have this freaking 24-year-old? And he's probably thinking, you know, oh, this is pretty cool. I got this pop guy who's got this interest. I'm learning. So we have good laughs. He's very talented. And we put the time in. It's a commitment, you know what I mean, to make a whole
album.
It
sounds young.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I think to make, you know, decent pop music, maybe you have to engage with that younger quality.
Right.
You know what I mean? And also at the same time, I felt like I was as honest as I ever been. I mean, not that I was explicitly going through things in my life now, but the energy was there. There's a chip on your shoulder in there somewhere, which I think you have to have for a certain kind of music, you know?
Is that what motivates you still to keep? Because you, I mean, we didn't get into it, but there's so much shit you've done. It's kind of mind-blowing. I mean, you know, Broadway and films and TV and, you know, going solo and, you know, going back out on the road with the band again. And I mean, is it a chip on your, is it something like I want to still be one of the relevant guys?
Yeah,
is that,
I mean,
it?
Well, at the end of the day, I just enjoy making things, and I think I bring something to the table. As I said, only in the last few years, turns out I do bring a lot to the table.
Yeah,
and I find that out by, for instance, in theater, like I originated a couple of roles in theater, and I'm in the room with good people, and I have a lot of ideas, and I share them, and it works out. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's all about getting in the different rooms and people seeing what you bring to the table. So I love that, and that's it. Outside of all that and the noise around what we do and presenting things to the world and yada, yada, you know, that could come and go. I think there's good days and bad days, right?
Yeah.
You know, as a creative person. I think mostly, you know, what I've been sharing about is, you know, being a part of such a success that is New Kids on the Block is, you know, it could be called that, you know, the Gilded Cage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that at the moment is the what I'm sparring with.
Right.
It's like, I love these guys. You know, they are literally like family. When you talk about I'm the youngest of nine, siblings, the idea of sibling relationships, I didn't really have that. Because I was, Tommy's 4 years older than me, and then everybody's older than me, and I had a great narrative. You know, they wanted to save me. I was blessed, you know, take care of Joe, save him from the madness of the house.
Really?
So I had a lovely narrative, you know what I mean? I was really, so I was a product of that. Then I'm thrown into this group at 12 with four other teenagers that were, you know, 15, 16 at the time. I'm 12, which is a huge difference.
Yeah.
So what I'm really, it's a process. Like, I've been with these guys for 40 years. Mm. Donnie Wahlberg, who is, you know, my family anyways, but like, we've just gotten closer and closer and closer.
Right.
But starting out, it was not easy.
Yeah.
And he's a huge personality.
Yeah.
A great leader, born leader.
Yeah.
He basically, aside from me, put the band together.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the one guy who he met Maurice and he basically, Donnie had to go find the group. You know what I mean? He went to school with all those guys. Our story is like, lots of times, you know, you think boy band, you know, fluff, you know, manufactured. I mean, it was such an up by a bootstraps Boston working class.
Yeah.
Like he was like, he called Jordan's house, who lived in Codman Square, like in this big Victorian rundown house, this big, beautiful family. We were all working class families. You know what I mean? So anyways, and we're still, I think, you know, finding ways to tell that story authentically as we speak. Anyways, I'm still trying to carve my path and have some autonomy while this beautiful thing rages on called New Kids on the Block. You know what I mean?
Well, you must feel like you have. I mean,
I have, but it's you know, a project at a time. Funny enough, like here I am, 50 years old. You know, I'm you know, for my 50th birthday, I played Carnegie Hall. It was freaking, you couldn't
nice.
Have, right, for 3 hours, they had to kick us off because of the unions. But it's like a, you know, It's a double-edged sword, those unions. So anyways, living my fullest, trying to balance, bringing them in. I mean, they were guests for my night. They were such a part of, you know, my story. But being on my own and claiming my space, it's almost like you create a monster. You know,
right.
You want more of it.
Right.
Meanwhile, New Kids on the Block is, I mean, the State of the Union is fantastic. You know what I mean? Where we continue to, you know, grow and you know, now we're about to start a residency in Vegas.
Yeah,
which,
I heard
you know
about
what I mean?
That, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. You know
no,
what I mean?
Not.
So
Vegas
so,
is awful.
So we still...
Yeah. Well, the shows will be fun. But,
right. No, all the bells and whistles, though. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's... anyways, so this album talks about, you know what I mean? There's this one song, Freedom, the title track, I guess you want to call it. So in Step by Step, one of our biggest songs, Jordan sings lead, but then we get to the set. Step one, you know, we can have lots of fun. Step two, there's so much we can do. Step three, it's just you and me. Step four, I can give you more. Then John says, step five, don't you know the time has arrived? And it's just a little bit. So in that song, Freedom, I say, step one, this isn't any fun.
Uh-huh.
I'm two steps from the door. Uh-huh. Close your eyes and count to three. Open up. You won't see me.
Uh-huh.
Step four, I cannot give you more if I'm ever going to make it out alive. The time has finally arrived, and it feels like freedom.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some of the fans, the diehards are like, oh, okay.
Yeah. They don't want it to change.
Oh, man. No, yeah. No. They want Mickey and Minnie, and they came to Disneyland
to see,
which I get, you know. I mean, they're fine with it, but I got to share that way on this
album. But what's interesting is a lot of times an artist will be part of a group, and then they'll go solo, and they really feel like they want to reinvent themselves, and they want to do something that, you know, is a new brand or whatever, however you describe it. But
yeah.
You've kind of kept one foot in each side as you do this, which isn't as clean of a break.
Right. And so it's like, and so as I talk about, the cool thing is, and I'm glad about it, because as I'm writing the record, I'm like, I'm a little bit in my bubble, and I'm, you know, I'm embracing that chip on my shoulder or whatever story I have to tell. But now, you know, like Donnie's been nice enough. He's a great collaborator. He says yes first.
Uh-huh.
He's just said, let's go.
Yeah,
yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and so I've been talking. He hosted a couple of listening parties, and I'm glad that I'm sharing it with him and with our fans.
Right.
And not trying to be divisive.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And not trying to do it on this podcast and nowhere else. You know
yeah.
what I mean? So, and the question is, can I have it both ways? Can freedom mm-hmm. be both?
Right.
You know?
Stevie Nicks went back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I, it's all relative. You know, I'm trying to, you know, sometimes you want it all or nothing and you want, you know, but just so happens that, you know, I'm lucky to be in a very successful band. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, the plight.
It gets
you know?
Along.
Yeah.
It gets along.
We
I mean,
do.
That's the thing is some people want to get back and tour for the money. You look at Oasis trying to get together and tour, and after two shows, they have to cancel the
was
entire
it? Was
tour.
Was it?
Yes. They had a fist fight on stage.
Again? No, they didn't.
Yes.
No, they didn't.
I don't know if it was fist, but it was somebody punched somebody. Yeah, there was at least one punch
they
thrown.
Don't, I'm sorry. That older brother is such a prick, man.
Yeah.
I
is that Liam?
I can't. Liam's the singer.
Okay.
Noel.
Oh, Noel is the,
no, the
yeah.
older one. I
okay.
mean, the stuff that he would pull, like, he would make his, the old footage, like Liam would be sitting in the back and Noel would be singing the song. I mean, he's famous for being, it's sort of his shtick, obviously.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean? But like, who,
yeah.
you know, a little bit of that is fine.
Yeah.
But like who needs that?
I know.
You know
well,
I mean?
You know, then you look at like, apparently like the Stones, like Mick and Keith didn't really talk for years.
Yeah.
And then the, you know, Keith's playing a lead and Mick is leaning in and they're sharing a mic
right.
and then they get off stage and just
yeah.
go to different hotels.
Yeah.
You know?
I think Steven Tyler and Joe Perry were like that too.
Uh-huh.
And we had those moments. I mean, historically, I mean, Donnie and I came from very similar homes, except he had brothers and I had sisters.
Yeah.
So it was like we were almost like some teenage married couple.
Yeah.
You know, he'd be like, rah, rah, and I'd be like, no, you don't. You know what I mean? Like, and then the rest of them would like, the rest of the new kids would just sit back and watch, you know, eating popcorn, you know?
Oh, that's funny.
But we were very passionate. As it turns out, you know, we become very great collaborators. But to your point, a lot of bands can't get back together.
Right.
Because we consistently, for better or for worse, chose family and friendship over the business.
Right.
Which is a pain in the ass a lot of the times.
Sure.
You know?
And you've got all your agents and managers fighting against you to do it. They want you to stay on the road. They want you in the recording studio.
Yeah.
And if somebody wants to take a break, they hate
it. Well, that, you know, that was, I mean, we early, you know, we finally burnt out and then grunge came along the first time around. And on paper, we took 14 years off. It's like, how does this work?
Right.
We'll take 14 years. Start by taking 14 years off and then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
And then since then, yeah, it has been, it's my piece de resistance. It's my, you know, Mount Rushmore. It's my, you know, Mount Vesuvius climbing. It's every, I work out all my stuff through the group, basically.
Yeah.
And thankfully, you know, I was able to keep it clean enough.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
I know. That would have wrecked you guys if one of you guys had a scandal. I mean, as a teen pop band, that's like, and I think it's different. If you guys, I have no idea what it was like when you were touring, but I got to guess as teenagers traveling around the world in stadiums, it must have been nuts.
Oh, no cameras and no cell phones.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Thank God, dude.
You couldn't do that today.
Yeah, it was bananas.
Yeah.
You know, we were 16 going to clubs and, oh, my kids don't see this.
What do you think?
What kind of
kids,
lighting is this with the stage? By the way, I moved to Venice. I know this. When I moved to Boston, I'm from Boston.
Yeah.
You got to go to Venice.
You got to go to Venice.
We had a, rented a Craftsman on Noita Place. Right?
Dude, that's around the corner from me.
Yeah, above Abbakinney.
Yeah.
Gorgeous when I first moved
shit.
Here. Yeah, in 2002. I was.
2002.
Yeah, I came out with a. The only way to come out here is with a gig, right? Otherwise, why
come
do
out
that?
Here with a what?
With a gig.
Yeah.
And I was on Boston Public. With David
Wait,
Kelly.
So when you were on Noita, was Julia Roberts living there at the time?
She had that same year. I was on that same block.
Okay.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
You know who else lived on that block? Louis C.K.
Really?
Yep. He's a good friend of mine, and he moved to my neighborhood.
Which was cool
friends.
Is that the Walk Street part was literally this big. It
yep.
wasn't the big Walk Street. It was the little one.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
your
yeah.
front gate
right.
was, like, you know, right there.
No, that block of Noita is there's a grid of Walk Streets in Venice that's very – I don't even want to talk about it because it's so,
so
quiet.
Special.
Nobody
yeah. –
like, nobody yeah. – it's not like the canals where there's tons of tourists
right.
taking pictures.
Yeah.
But it's just – it's a sidewalk with houses on either side, and then they have the alleys behind to
yeah.
park. So it's just – and people take their fences down.
It's gorgeous.
And dogs and kids are running back and forth. I've been there for 25 years. I know every neighbor
wow.
on the Walk Street.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
just
yeah.
it's sort of like some neighborhoods have an identity, and our identity is we talk to each other. We go to each other's
right.
houses for dinner. We have
block
poker
parties
nights,
and a,
block
yeah.
parties.
It's magical.
Yeah.
It's absolutely magical. And I was there for my first year out here and met my wife there. She
really?
she was a realtor.
Okay.
And found me the place.
No shit.
Yeah, she found me the place. And it was this or a place on Speedway, and we were just hanging out. And I said. Sounds so stupid. I was like, I think I even said, like, if we were dating, you know, which one would you pick, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, not the one with the gray carpet on Speedway that looks like a shanty.
That's
the beautiful Craftsman on a Walk Street,
yeah.
you know. So I did that one. And then I ended up buying a house on the canals, actually.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Was it annoying having people walking by all the time?
No, I mean, I was young enough. I didn't really, whatever. It was like, it was, you know, funny enough, and you'll get this. It was a brand new house, like three-decker.
Yeah.
You know, it was
a
McMansion. It was a McMansion, you
yeah.
know. And as we had just closed on it, but there was a second one, like a twin one. And we're checking out. We're like, oh, my God. We're like, you know. And some guy, Rufus, and he's probably still there. And as we're passing, he goes, they ought to blow the fuckers up. You know, like he didn't want that. He wanted the little, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was sort of like.
Yeah, those little crafts.
Can we swear on the.
Fuck
yeah. Okay.
No, the Venice is a really special place.
It's cool.
And our producer here, Paul, is from there. So I know him. He lived three doors down from me, and we've been friends for 25 years.
Three doors down, name a record.
Can't do it, but I actually love their drummer. I saw them. K-Rock has a Christmas party every year, and they played at it a couple years ago. And let me tell you something: their drummer fucking rocks.
You're a drummer.
Yeah,
I can. You and Bill get geek out on drummers.
Oh, Bill Burr.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I
do
love.
You play?
I love good drum. No, no,
no.
I'm starting to play bass. My whole life I wanted to play bass, and I just started taking lessons.
Good for you.
Yeah, you got to learn and grow. But no, and you're also friends with Adam Ray, who's a good buddy of mine.
Very, yes.
We just did a big podcast together this week over, Jay Oakerson and those guys from New York came in and did this show thing.
No, I didn't know. He does, God bless him with the Phil, Dr.
He's
Phil.
He's
killing
up.
5,000 seaters. Yep. It's like, what?
And a year ago.
I know.
That guy was playing the same clubs I was. Laugh Boston, for
totally,
God's sake.
Totally, no. It's almost cliche, but couldn't happen to a better guy.
It really could.
If we earn things in this business, golly,
yeah.
He earned it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a guy that put in his time, and he's a good actor. Is that how you guys know
each
other?
Yeah, we met in on the Heat.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, on the Heat.
With Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, yeah, and Sandra Bullock, Paul Feig, director.
Yeah,
and,
right.
What a trip that was.
Wow.
So much fun, yeah. And
did you have scenes together?
No, we didn't. Completely different, but we met at a screening, and
uh-huh.
You know Adam. He's
stay in his life when you meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Right.
So, and then, we did a show. I created a show for Pop TV. It was called Return of the Mac. It was sort of my version of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, that's cool.
It was scripted, but it was very scripted.
It was loose.
Well, it wasn't loose. I'm just saying I did play myself. So
okay.
It was like, but it was scripted and he played my manager. It was 8 episodes. The thing is, a lot of it was one of those things, did nothing, came and went, but people I respect, like Bill Burr was a fan. Like, he was like, I want to be on
Pop
second
TV?
Season two.
Where was that? I never even
and
heard
of it. It was after Schitt's Creek, and it just didn't. I think people wanted this. You know
what
I mean? Like, fans want this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Woo, everything's right. Okay.
Right.
You know, and I'm doing like.
Dripping cyst on your eye.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like...
This looks better in Venice, too.
It does. No,
now it works.
Yeah, yeah,
see
now
how
it works.
The outfit works.
Yep.
This is guy who dressed for the gym, not going.
Yep.
This guy, it all works.
This guy owns a coffee shop. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Look at all your little bracelets.
Yeah.
What is that all about?
Well, of course, my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, is a big Swiftie. But everybody does these.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Swiftie is she owns everything, even stuff that used to be other things. But this isn't that cute? My daughter made Freedom.
Oh, that's
nice.
She
made Freedom. She made Ludgy, which my son, he would go to bed at night, and part of the backstory is you wouldn't know it, but he was born Second son, my youngest son, I hate to call him the middle guy.
Yeah.
He was born with severe hearing loss. And So I had hearing aids since he was a month old.
Uh-huh.
And if you met him, you really wouldn't notice but he's an amazing guy. And
but he's got full hearing with the aids?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. He makes you think he does because of the hard work he does, and he pieces it together. And
right.
Usually you learn a lot. You know, when people... sound deaf.
Yeah.
They talk that way because that's what they hear.
Right.
I know that sounds
muffled.
Dumb.
No, I get it. They're not as crisp because they're not hearing
It's not the deafness isn't affecting their voice that he sound like that way.
Right.
But if they lose different syllables and stuff like
right.
that. So he doesn't have that because he has the,
oh, that's
the
amazing.
Hearing aids.
Wow.
However, when you take him out, the cool thing is when you take him out, you get a whisper in his ear. You know, or if you, whatever. If he was ever having, he can still hear you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So at night, this is a long, I didn't know we'd take this thing, sorry.
Well, this is what FitzDog Radio is all about.
Thank
it's
you.
An
thank
exploration.
You.
Yeah.
And it's cute. Well, he used to, when he would go to bed,
you'd say in his ear, like, I love you. And he'd say, I love you too. You know, the ludge instead of love, like,
so
I don't know.
Changes
it might have been a
that.
Kid thing. It might have been a kid thing, or maybe the hearing, you know.
But with the hearing aid in, he would
might
say,
have been,
Chris
I love
way.
You too. Yeah. Yeah. It might have been, I love you too. But maybe he was sleeping. But then it became a thing. You know, kid, it was probably kid talk.
Gotcha. Right, right, right.
Ludgy.
Yeah. So oh, ludgy. I like that.
Ludgy. So instead of I love you, it's ludgy.
Yeah. Ludge. I love it.
So she made me a ludgy. And then I have this one, a fan maybe. It's all practice. It's all practice.
I'm gonna,
guy playing the bass.
That's right.
Going for it. It's
three
all practice.
3 hours a day. I do 3 hours a day.
No, you don't.
No. I do about 20 minutes. I have ADHD. All right, before we go, we're going to do a quick thing called Fastballs with Fitz. I'm going to ask you, what's the closest? These are just questions. They're quick questions.
Don't expound.
Deep. Don't expound? Is that a word?
It's a big word. Are we checking with the producers?
Put your earpiece in.
Expound?
Yeah, you're right, actually.
That's a really good big word, $5 word. $5.
What's the closest you ever got to a fist fight on stage?
Oh, jeez. Donnie, I think it was 91. You know, things were coming undone. We were doing the best we could, but he, we all had moments in the show, and he would touch base with the crowd, and maybe he went a little longer than normal to the point where we would go backstage and play video games.
No way.
Yeah. So now he was done, and by then no one showed up.
Uh-huh.
So then he just made the band play the song.
Yeah.
So we had to run like crazy because we heard the song, and then we were halfway there, and he was kind of talking trash, and then I talked trash. And then, like,
and this is in a stadium.
Yeah, yeah, an arena, anyways. Right. Yeah, and he's like, every time, in the rap that he said, every time I look, I find you dissing a mission that's strictly righteous. He said, every time I look, I find Joe dissing a mission that's strictly righteous.
Really? 'Cause
he was acting up, so I acted up, and he said that. And when he said that, I left the stage, and I hit the showers mid-show.
Wow,
and then they
shit.
Stopped the show, and everybody told us to get back there and that whole thing. So, you know.
That's good.
So we didn't come to blows, but
that
was heavy.
I like it.
There you go.
He's a good actor, by the way.
Yeah. He's,
did I hear
he's got
that,
the spinoff of Blue Bloods,
I
dude.
I heard that. Jesus Christ, that show. Len Cario's a dear friend who plays his father on the show. And 15...
Oh, grandfather, yeah.
Grandfather.
Dude, 15 years. It's unheard
15
of.
15 years.
It's unheard
and
of.
It's, and he wants more. People have to understand something. Shooting a one-hour single camera is 12, 14 hours a day.
Talk about get a job, though. He's like, I mean, you could say maybe he's, you know, he likes to be busy, you know, to put it lightly. Listen, I'm grateful that I was able to be a friend and see him walk through them wanting to, you know. But, wow.
Yeah.
It's unheard of.
It's,
you know, it's almost like he's the last of the Mohegans. Right, you kind of got to do it for the history of television because it doesn't happen anymore.
Right, right.
And I think, I don't know, am I giving it away? The guy goes to Boston.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Donnie is...
So now he gets to live in Boston.
He gets to shoot in Boston.
But doesn't he live in Chicago? Or
he does.
Yeah.
He does. I mean, it's not, you know, but he worked it out. I mean, what are you going to do?
Dude, I'm going to do 3 more podcasts and retire.
I know.
I'm done.
I know, bro. Sorry, here we go. I expounded. Sorry.
There are 2 types of people in the world. Go.
I was going to say decaf and caffeinated. I don't know. That's lame. That sucks.
Well, you got Starbucks on your mind.
Scabs and union guys.
I like that.
How's that
one? Right.
Wrap it up.
Because that goes deep. That goes deep. Yep.
I want to either piss people off or have them love me.
Union
Nothing
guys
in between.
Stay married. They keep their friends. All right, I'm just spitballing
here. They'll come shovel your driveway.
What's the... What's the last time you apologized?
Oh, golly.
I'm
really good at that.
Because you're Catholic. We confess.
You know, I like to
keep it clean. I'm just good at that. When's the last time I apologized? I probably got a little heated with my son, and I just told him, listen, I got a little heated, but I want you to know, no matter what, where you go, what you do, I'm there for you. But, you know, I guess that's the closest I...
That to me, apologizing to my kids is one of the easiest things and yet the most profound things, because you're teaching them to take accountability for yourself and to be vulnerable enough and love somebody enough that you can do that.
Yeah.
It's a great lesson.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. That's true.
Last thing.
Don't say. Say it ain't so.
What have you turned down recently?
Oh, my gosh. I'm thinking of the thing I should have turned down, but I'm going to do. Golly, can't say that out loud. Tell you that afterwards. Hopefully we'll do all right with it. What did I turn down? I turned down a lot of cocktails lately.
Are you sober?
Craig, yeah, it'll be March 10th. Will be a year. I haven't had a cocktail.
Man.
Yeah. Aside from three hits off a vape pen, it would be completely clean and sober.
So you're California sober?
No, only once for a day. You know, that's what pisses me off about it. I was like, no, I just want if I was gonna do it. But no, I'm not. I'm full on. Yeah.
That's
aside
great.
From that one day.
Yeah.
One time. Yeah.
That's great.
And that's a blow mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, maybe you can go to Footprints in Quincy now.
I love it. Let's start at Footprints West.
Me, you, and Kevin.
I love it.
I can't say enough about what a great hour this has been. The album's called Freedom. The tour, the residency in Vegas is
going to
be coming up, and that's going to be August 26th through the 29th.
That starts in June 20th, but I got to hit my dates. That's what most of you guests do, right? Because I have solo dates in April.
Oh, you're gone every Joey night
McIntyre,
in April.
JoeyMcIntyre.com for all the tickets, but I'm doing basically, you want to hear my little rap, in Vogue rap that I'm just doing? I'm going to make a little TikTok about it. Here are the dates. Should I do it as Madonna
this
in Vogue?
This would be amazing.
Okay, here we go. Houston, Dallas, and Old St. Louis. Chicago, Detroit, Toronto, too. Cleveland, Twoville's Lou and Nash. Birmingham, let's kick some ash. Gainesville, Savannah, Raleigh, D.C., Philly, Boston, and NYC. Freedom Tour Phase 1 is here. Guess what, baby? See you there.
You just kicked some ash on that one.
I didn't mean to say ash, but it's better ash than
ash. It's totally better.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
All right.
Appreciate it.
All right. See ya.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.